CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Bob Zimmerman keeps the website Behind the Black. And for many years now, Bob has chronicled the rise of commercial space. There's more to say than commercial space good, big space, the old days. However, Bob is taking us into what works and what doesn't, and how refinancing can be part of the solution. Bob, what is momentous? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. I did an essay on Behind the Black the other day called The Ups and Downs of Capitalism, and it was inspired by two very similar stories, but one was positive and the other one sounded pretty negative. And in fact, we're going to follow with a whole bunch of other stories that fall into the same line. Because when you have freedom and capitalism and competition, you get wonderful achievements very, very quickly, as illustrated by SpaceX and its Falcon 9 and its Starship Super Heavy. But you also get depressing failures, because freedom means nothing's guaranteed and things can go wrong. And so you live with that risk because it gets you benefits beyond belief. And so these two stories, Momentous, to answer your question, is a orbital tug company. They have already done about three, maybe four, maybe more demo missions, and with some with actual customers making money, moving CubeSats after launch to a preferred orbit, delivering them using their tug. Unfortunately, though, despite these several successful missions demonstrating that they work, and in addition to having future missions as well already on the schedule, they had to lay off 30% of their staff because of dwindling cash reserves. They had just under $2 million of revenue in the second quarter, which was the first time they earned more than $1 million in a quarter, but they had a net loss of almost $20 million, and they only have about $22 million, $23 million in cash reserves on hand. So they're scrambling to find new sources of investment capital, because it doesn't appear that the revenue they're going to be bringing in the coming months is going to keep them above water. This doesn't mean the company is a failure. It means that just, you know, cash flow problems could kill it. And that's an example of the downside of capitalism. And the positive side is another company called Terran Orbital. These are, by the way, small startups. Terran Orbital, instead of focusing on rockets or orbital tags, it focuses on building satellites. Small satellites, CubeSats, tiny satellites. They decided to provide service to the industry. They would make satellites for you. Their most famous satellite is Capstone, which is an orbital lunar orbiter that they built for NASA, and it's working still on the moon more than a year since it was reached the moon. Earlier this year, obtained a $2.6 billion contract to build 300 satellites for a wireless communications company called Rivada Space Networks. It sounds like a startup as well. And the first $180 million payment is expected this year. Now, there are risks. There are questions of whether Rivada is going to raise the money itself to pay the contract. And Terran Orbital won't be dead if it doesn't get that contract, but it will really. It'd be nice to get a lot more money, John. So those two stories show the ups and downs, and we've got others. For example, another one, I'll go right to it, John. Astra is a former startup rocket company. They abandoned rocket development temporarily because of their own dwindling cash reserves. And they, like Momentous, is now scrambling to find investors. Their investors they do have aren't happy with them because they made a promise that their rocket was going to be so profitable it would be launching 300 times a year. And instead, they abandoned the rocket after a few launches because they realized they weren't going to get enough business for that small rocket, and they had to have the bigger rocket to have any business. So their investors aren't happy, and yet they're running out of cash, and so they're looking for new investors. They're focusing now on their rocket engine technology and selling rocket engines to other companies, and they are making revenue from that, but it's hardly enough to pay the bills. And so they're another company like Momentous that might go out of business. They are less, as a technology company, I would say Astra is less successful than Momentous because they didn't build a rocket that was very profitable and had to abandon it, while Momentous has built successfully and flown successfully orbital tugs that have been used and are purchasing by companies.
I tell a story, Bob. This is from the period of time 1912 to 1917. Every barn in the Midwest, especially Wisconsin, was filled with a truck company. Everybody was turning out lorries, large trucks that could carry farm goods over unpaved roads, you know, all those ruts out there.
Yes.
And the companies all had so many names. I looked at the advertisements in the New York papers. There were so many names, you were overwhelmed. You wondered whatever happened to. Eventually, all of that came together. General Motors all gathered up all those truck makers, and the men who worked on them, who used to be farmers and turned into engineers, all gathered around Detroit. I'm only telling that romantic story, Bob, because that resembles what you're telling every week on Behind the Black. It's the barns and the building of rockets that will all eventually be General Rockets.
This is a normal situation with any new industry. You start out with many, many different small companies. With time, it begins to consolidate into bigger and bigger. Eventually, it gets so big, it becomes corrupt. I just described the internet business and the computer business, didn't I, John? It becomes corrupt and not reliable, and so what happens? New startups start appearing in a good, competitive, healthy society. New startups start appearing to compete with the big giants, and that's a good example of what's happening in, for example, the communications industry. And so that's where we stand. And I agree with you. We're seeing a lot of startups, many of which will die, many of which will succeed. Eventually, the successful ones will see some consolidation. The very successful ones won't consolidate. They'll just become very, very big and successful, such as SpaceX, John.
Right.
We have an update on SpaceX. They are getting really ready to do their second attempt to launch Starship and Super Heavy as a single rocket from Boca Chica. The first test in April was a failure, not a surprise. It was an engineering test to try to figure out how to build this properly. So they expected it not to work. But the FAA and the Biden administration is treating that rocket like an operational airplane, and therefore everything that goes wrong, they treat it like a real accident that an airplane has. And so SpaceX has now submitted its investigative report on that launch failure to the FAA. And the FAA says it's now going to review that. And let me quote, when a final mishap report is approved, it will identify the corrective actions SpaceX must take, an FAA spokesman told Ars Technica. Separately, SpaceX must modify its license to incorporate those actions before receiving authorization to launch again. Now, I must emphasize this. FAA has nobody qualified in any way, shape, or form to know what needs to be done in making Starship and Super Heavy a safe thing to launch. They have no one qualified to do that. They will review SpaceX's effort, and if there's a desire to slow SpaceX down, they'll come up with things they think should be done. And do they need to be done? They will have no idea, but they'll come up with things. And then SpaceX will have to either scramble to do them or argue they don't need to be done. But either way, that's going to eat time. And so I don't expect that SpaceX has submitted the report to the FAA. SpaceX has also obtained a Coast Guard license targeting August 31st for a SpaceX Super Heavy launch. This is for ocean vehicle vessels to avoid the range during that period of time. But I don't expect this to happen then, because I think that the FAA will be very slow. It will demand a lot of changes from SpaceX. I fully expect them to take at least 2 months to review that report before issuing any demands. I also expect further demands later. I don't really expect this launch to happen for months, John, even though it looks like SpaceX is ready and they want to do monthly launches to test their spacecraft, but they can't do it because this is what's happened since the Biden administration.
Bob, do we think that the FAA was waiting for SpaceX's report before it responded?
Yes.
In other words, I assume that the FAA was reviewing everything on its own. This makes it look like it was SpaceX who was reviewing, and the FAA will respond.
This is getting back to what I said before. There is no one at the FAA qualified to do this investigation or participate. Without question, while SpaceX was doing its investigation, it was in total communication with the FAA and keeping them on board at every step of the way. But what could they do? These are paper pushers. I'm sorry. They're bureaucrats. They might be engineers, but they're not designing rockets. So they can't really give any input. Maybe they can make, if they're intelligent, they can make suggestions. But the bottom line is the FAA was probably on board as SpaceX did its investigation, but nothing could happen until SpaceX was completed. I would not be surprised if the FAA's suggestion slowed the investigation down and any changes that needed to be done. But once it's submitted, now the FAA can go through it page by page and find out where certain where there might be typos that have to be fixed. And typos will require an extra few weeks investigation to figure out what they
need. Is the report public?
No, it's not public. It's a lot of this is proprietary engineering. SpaceX doesn't reveal that to its competitors, and so no, they don't reveal it. It's not public.
All right, we go to another regulatory slowdown. This is in Scotland, the Shetlands. How so?
This is the Saxeford Spaceport. They've been hoping to get their first launch off by fall of this year. They submitted to the Civil Aviation Authority in the United Kingdom. That's the one that regulates space launches. They submitted their license application for this launch in November. We are now in late August, and Saxeford released a short statement saying they're in continuing excellent dialogue with the Civil Aviation Authority, and they hope to get the application in the coming weeks. But at the same time, they also noticed that they've laid off all the construction workers that have been working on the launch site, preparing it for the first launch. They claim it was because the project was so far ahead of schedule. I think what's going on is they realize that they're not going to get the launch off when they think, and they can't keep holding these guys around. This is the same problem the Civil Aviation Authority created for Virgin Orbit that put it out of business because they took so long. It does appear it takes that aviation authority at least a year to approve any launch license. If that is the case, it will be completely unprofitable for any launch company to launch out of Shetland or the United Kingdom. And if it doesn't change soon, the two spaceports in the United Kingdom that are trying to get started are both going to die. And it's really a
Let's go to Australia. This is Northern Territory. And on the coast, and we're looking for, again, a spaceport. What is its status?
This is Australia's first commercial private spaceport. It's called Equatorial Launch Australia. It's very near the equator. It's on the northern coast of Australia in a relatively remote area. And they have signed a contract with a South Korean company rocket startup called InnoSpace. InnoSpace has not launched an orbital rocket yet, but they have successfully done one suborbital test. And so they've signed a contract with ELA, that's the Equatorial Launch Australia, to use that spaceport to do a number of launches over the next few years. However, this is getting back to regulatory world. The reason that ELA signed with a South Korean company is because it has six other rocket startups in America that want to launch out of Australia, and they can't get those contracts signed because of delays, quote, to the signing of the technological safeguards agreement between Australia and the United States. The United States promised this would be done. There was a bilateral agreement between Biden and Japan in June that said make this a done deal. But here we are in August and still no signing. So they can't get any American launch contracts in Australia going because of the Biden administration. What I see is an increasing intransigence and desire to slow private enterprise down.
Why the equator? What's the advantage?
Depending on where you launch, gives you advantages for certain types of launch. The equator has an advantage that you can get, because of the Earth's rotation, you can get more payload in orbit for less fuel. But that only really works well if you're doing an orbit that's at the equator. The more inclination an orbit has tilted towards the poles, the less advantage that has. But it does have an advantage. I do want to note that the map I posted on Behind the Black of where this spaceport is located, yes, it's on the northern coast of Australia, but any launches, they only really can launch northward to avoid a land, and even if they do that, they're going right over Papua New Guinea. I'm not sure how many directions they can actually launch from this particular launch location, John.
It is the first spaceport, however, and there's a lot of territory in Australia that can be used. I'm I think this is a positive development. We know New Zealand was into this, right? Because they have a launch company already that has used New Zealand. So
yes, Rocket Lab launches out of New Zealand. It built its own space for it. And by the way, Australia has had other spaceports before, but they were government run. And there are other companies that I know. I can't name where they are, but there are other commercial entities in Australia that are trying to establish spaceports, but they're not as well advanced. And there are locations, I think, on the coast of Australia that might be better than this. But you then get farther away from the equator, and that is not necessarily a problem. Think about Shetland, right. The two Scotland airports in the UK, they're very high latitudes. So it's a disadvantage maybe for equatorial orbits, but for other orbits, it's not.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going exploring. I'm John Patrick.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.